if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed it is, and a good morning to you. Thank you for joining us as we get underway now at 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on a Thursday, the fourth morning of the third month of the year of our Lord, 2021. And my oh my, is 2021 shaping up to be an awful lot more like 2020 than any of us ever realized that it could be. Before we get started on our cavalcade of guests today and to tell you what we're talking about, let us all pause for the pledge. If you are not driving right now, please stand up. Place your hand over your heart and join us in the liberals' worst nightmare, pledging allegiance to this horrible country.
United States of America and to the Republic.
I'm going to start that again because for some reason it wasn't queued up to the beginning. One more time.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, 8 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, coming up on the program today, we are loaded for bear. There is a Second Amendment gun grab that you may or may not be aware of that needs to be addressed, and we are going to address it coming up at about 9:35. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy has put forth a universal background check bill that is believed to be the first step toward much more strict gun control legislation that will be introduced by the Democrat-controlled House. On February 14th, universal background check legislation, and on the 18th, Murphy did exactly that. And now this is coming up for a vote. Well, actually, it's being introduced, and it will be coming up for a vote shortly. And we're going to talk about what that means to responsible Second Amendment believers and American gun owners. We're going to be talking with A.W.R. Hawkins of Breitbart News, an award-winning Second Amendment columnist who also hosts political analyst, rather, for Armed American Radio. So that's coming up at 9:35. Also on the program today at 10:10, we're going to have our second conversation with Josh Mandel. Josh Mandel, of course, has declared his intention to run for the Senate seat that is going to be vacated by Rob Portman when he does not run for re-election or resigns it. Who knows if he will even hold on to it until the 2022 election. But Josh Mandel, we're not going to be talking about politics as much on the Senate level as we are about what's going on in the state of Ohio. Josh Mandel put out a strong statement condemning Mike DeWine's response to Governor Greg Abbott and Governor Tate Reeves in Texas and Mississippi, respectively, and their moves to lift restrictions in their states. Governor Mike DeWine had a different plan. Josh Mandel is not happy about it. He's going to talk to us about what he would like to see happen here. That'll be coming up at 10:10. This morning. And then at 10:35, let's see, it's hard to keep all of these guests straight, to be 100% honest with you sometimes. At 10:35, we are going to be talking with my friend Molly. Our friend Molly Smith. Molly Smith is going to join us to talk about the upcoming Right to Life, Cleveland Right to Life, Bringing America Back to Life conference. It's coming up next weekend, March 12th and 13th. Charlie Kirk will be the keynote speaker, and yours truly will be the MC for the conference. And I'm very much looking forward to that. It's going to be my first time working with the Right to Life conference. So Molly Smith will tell us all about that. And I know that all of the pro-lifers listening to this, in this audience, to this program, are going to be very, very pleased to hear this. So Molly Smith is coming up at 10:35. So we're very busy today. I want to dive right in. Here's a very interesting question for you. Are the Democrats trying to outdo themselves when it comes to introducing the most radical, ridiculous, dangerous legislation? I mean, seriously, just a few days ago, they passed the Radical Equality Act. And when I say radical, I'm not overstating and I'm not being hyperbolic. It is radical and it is extremely dangerous for a lot of people, for the faithful, for women in particular, for young girls. It is dangerous six different ways from Sunday. And they passed it. It's not going to get through the Senate, we hope, but they passed it. Yesterday, they outdid themselves and they passed two more pieces of radical legislation. The real question, like I said, is which ones are the most radical? Here's the first.
On a vote of 220-210, the House passed H.R. 1, the For the People Act, a sweeping voter reform bill. Texas Democrat Colin Allred says the legislation will make it easier for Americans to vote.
This bill will do so by allowing for automatic and same-day voter registration and establishing a national early voting period, while also enacting key reforms that will make our elections more secure.
In addition to automatic voter registration, the legislation would change state voter ID laws and restore voting rights to convicted felons. The measure faces a tough climb in the Senate, where Republicans say the proposals threaten election security.
I don't have enough time in this show to list all of the things that are wrong with what you just heard, but I trust this audience to know most of them when you hear them. Between, you know, the convicted felons voting, to the same day registration, to eliminating any voter identification required by any states, to national early voting periods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is, and by the way, the laughable notion that anything in this bill would actually increase election security rather than open up the elections to even more fraud, the possibility of more fraud than we saw on November 3rd, that's absurdity of the highest order. But that's H.R. 1. They passed that one yesterday to make it easier to cheat in American elections. And now, and then also they passed this one.
The George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, which bans chokeholds, aims to end racial and religious profiling, and mandates data collection on police encounters. GOP Congressman Andy Biggs is among opponents who say it will defund police and leave communities vulnerable to crime. But the bill's author, California Democrat Karen Bass, says that criticism is built on unfounded fears and racism. Bass says that changes to the bill are likely to come if the measure is to meet the 60-vote threshold needed to advance in the Senate.
Yeah, you can say that three more times. If the measure is to be advanced in the Senate, it will take 60 votes. It will not. The only saving graces that we have right now is the House continues to pass radical, and it seems like they're just trying to see how far can we push this envelope before there is a national pushback. We're going to roll out the ridiculously radical, dangerous Equality Act. We're going to roll out the ridiculously radical and dangerous We the People Voter Fraud Act. And we're going to roll out the ridiculously dangerous George Floyd policing bill as well. And if anybody objects to any of the above, do you realize this? This is the new game. You know how we used to call playing the race card? It's not on the bottom of the deck anymore. That race card actually isn't even on top of the deck anymore. The race card is the deck. It's a deck full of race cards. If you complain about anyone, or if you vote against any one of the radical bills that I just told you, and by the way, I haven't even begun on the Green New Deal legislation that is coming, probably piecemeal rather than in one great big giant package. But if you object to any of the above, you are a racist and or a homophobe and or a transphobe. and or some other type of bigot that will be named later. I mean, that's what they've done here. Take the George Floyd policing bill that I just described, or I just played for you. This bill bans the quote unquote, you know, the so-called chokeholds, the police chokeholds, making it appear as though police are literally trying to choke the life out of suspects when they put their arm around their neck and try to bring them under control, as if they're literally trying to choke them. A chokehold is very different from what the police actually use, which is called a lateral vascular neck restraint, an LVNR, where the goal isn't to actually put pressure on the throat and the esophagus so someone cannot breathe. It's putting pressure on the carotid artery on the side of the neck in order to stop blood flow so the person gets weaker and nauseous and can't stand and can be more easily taken down and brought under control. It is not a chokehold, but that's what they call it for maximum public anger and effect. The bill that they passed would remove qualified immunity from police officers in policing. If you don't know what that means, it means an end to policing in America if this were to happen. You understand that? Why would it lead to an end of policing in America? Because no police officer would ever, ever take the job. No one would apply, and anybody who is already working as a police officer would resign immediately. Or they would do perhaps, you know, maybe even the next best thing, and that is stay on the job and collect their check and go park under a tree and sit. No one is going to try to stop violent crime. No one is going to try to deal with violent encounters with suspects if they don't have qualified immunity. And qualified immunity means that the suspect can't sue you personally if they feel as though your conduct has been inappropriate. So if a police officer takes someone to the ground who is trying to get his gun, and in the course of taking someone to the ground, the suspect's head hits the ground, and maybe he gets a little cut, maybe he gets a little bruise, whatever, all because of his resisting arrest in an engagement with a police officer, that person would then have the right to sue, not the city, not the police department, but the officer himself. And if some ridiculously, you know, virtue signaling jury says, yeah, he hit his head, you shouldn't have done that, they can take the officer's house, everything they own. You cannot allow anyone to remove qualified immunity from police officers. If police officers' actions are deemed to be inappropriate or irregular or whatever, then it goes to the police department and the city to defend. It is not the individual. I'm telling you right now, we will never have, and Karen Bass, who sponsored this thing, had the gall to say that anybody who says this, you know, the crime is going to rise because of these things. It's just racist. It's not racist when it's reality. It's not racist when it's reality. If I could say that 10 more times, I would. The reality is that when it comes to violent crime in America, 13% of the population, the African-American population, commits 50% of the homicides, and more than 60 to 70%, I'll have to pull the numbers back out, I read them all the time, of violent assaults, armed robberies, and the like. Meaning they are going to be more likely to be in encounters with police officers. So if police officers don't have qualified immunity when confronting these people, they're not going to confront these people. And what does that mean? That means they're going to step up the number of violent crimes and attacks and robberies and things that they commit. And guess who the victims are in 95% of the cases of African Americans committing these violent crimes? The victims are African Americans. So what this bill does, this George Floyd Reform in Policing Act does, it puts black people in much, much more danger. If that is the exact opposite of racism, if you oppose this bill, that means you support protecting black victims, not just black victims. I'm only referring to that part of this because Karen Bass, who sponsored this thing, called opposition to it racist. So let's talk about the real issues when it comes to race and crime in America. But the bottom line is police officers will back away from violent encounters in any neighborhood, black, white, brown, you name it. They're going to back off from all of them if they're not going to have the security and knowing that they're not going to lose their house if things go sideways. And if somebody attacks them and they have to fight back and they fight back too hard and somebody suffers a severe injury, that they're going to lose everything they have. This bill is a de facto defunding of police. And the Democrats passed it on a pure party line vote. It is simply unbelievable. So between trying to steal more elections with HB1, the George Floyd policing bill, and now the Equality Act, which again passed already in the House last week, it's going to the Senate. It's my friends, it's on right now. You understand what I'm saying to you? It's on right now. The battle for this republic to survive is on right now. You had better become active. And if you're not hammering your senators' phone lines, hammering their email inbox right now, demanding that they oppose all three of those radical, liberal, leftist, democratic pieces of legislation coming from Nancy Pelosi's broken house, then you are surrendering this republic. It is really that serious. All right, it's 9:22. I'll take a breath here. We're going to get a timeout, then we're going to get to you. I want to hear your phone calls, especially now because I've got guests coming up at 9:35. But dial them up at 216-901-0945 right here on The Authority. Okay, it's 9:27. Don't forget, we got a lot of guests coming up here. So when there's time to get in, I should say, you should try to get in. I'm not going to probably have time to get a call in right now, though, because I want to share this with you. This is one of the reasons that I'm going to be talking to Josh Mandel at 10:10, because he was highly critical of Governor Mike DeWine yesterday, as I am about to be. Yesterday, I told you, and we celebrated. I even did the Prager Show yesterday. And for the first time in the history of the Dennis Prager Show, George Michael blared out of the speakers on the Dennis Prager Show. Because I felt the need to play Freedom, the George Michael song Freedom from 1990, because it worked, because we were celebrating the freedom of the people of Texas and the freedom of the people in Mississippi. Yesterday, those two governors made their announcements that they are lifting all sanctions against the people, putting businesses back on a paying basis to the point where they can open up 100% capacity and no more mask mandates. People can wear them if they choose. Businesses can choose however they want to run themselves, but no more governmentally ordered mask mandates, right? So while I was playing Freedom on the Dennis Prager Show, celebrating that, Governor Mike DeWine was looking at all and saying, blank you. At the same day, or on the same day that that news broke, Mike DeWine issued his new rulings yesterday. And his new rulings are, we are not changing our rulings. Yes, he did give some updates on some of the mass gatherings thing, gathering things, wedding receptions, funerals, proms, and other events, whether or not food is served at banquet facilities, shall comply with previously signed orders, including those regarding restaurants and facial coverings. Events at banquet centers no longer have a 300-person limitation, but they still have to comply with the other health orders, including the masking. Addenda to the director's second amended order that provides mandatory requirements for youth, collegiate, amateur club, professional sports, etc. The maximum number of spectators in any indoor facility shall be 25% of fixed seated capacity. That's indoor, 30% for outside. Number of patrons at an indoor entertainment venue, 25%, et cetera, et cetera. All capacity numbers that they are allowing are still subject to the mask mandate. So in other words, while Texas and Mississippi joined 13 other states now, and I don't know if you knew that. I did not realize that as of yesterday. It was actually my wife who pointed it out because she saw an article about it, and then I posted about it as well. But 13 other states prior to Texas and Mississippi did not have mask mandates. Did you know this? And I posted which of these things is not like the other, which of these things just isn't the same. Alaska, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Ohio. Which of these things is not like the others? And the answer, of course, is Ohio. Because while all of those other states are mask-free, or at least mandate-free, Mike DeWine just looks at everybody and says, blank you, I'm in charge. Then he tucks his little hand into his little vest, just like the little Napoleon that he is. He's not surrendering his power to anybody. Mike DeWine continues to keep the lockdown on the people of the state of Ohio in terms of capacities and in terms of freedom of speech and expression with this forced compliance with their ridiculous unconstitutional mask order. He is going to pay a price. He is going to pay a massive price. And you know who's going to ensure that? Jim Renacci is going to ensure that, or Warren Davidson is going to ensure that. Some Republican who's going to primary him is going to beat him. And his political price will be the end of his political career. Make no mistake about it. Mike DeWine is destroying Ohio, and in return, we are going to have to make sure to destroy his political career. All right, we're going to talk more coming up after the news on AM 1420, The Answer.
There are two sides to every story. There's the mainstream media side, and then there's the truth. You are experiencing the truth. The Bob France Authority on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, 9:36, we continue on this Thursday. Thanks again for being with us. We'll come back to the mask mandate in a bit. Josh Mandel is going to have some things to say about Mike DeWine's decisions coming up at 10:10. Also, don't forget, we're going to talk to Molly Smith, Cleveland Right to Life leader, about the huge conference coming up next weekend that I will be emceeing. That'll be at 10:35. But for now, let's talk about guns. We have not talked about the Biden administration's gun grab very much in this first 6 weeks or so of his administration. But now that Democrat Senator Chris Murphy has introduced a universal background check bill that is only step one in a much, much longer journey toward removing your rights to protect and defend yourselves with firearms, or yourself with firearms, I think the time is right. Murphy's bill introduced criminalizes law-abiding citizens who sell, for example, a five-shot revolver to a lifelong neighbor, unless that neighbor first seeks out a federal firearms license holder and undergoes an FBI background check. On the other hand, such checks do not impact criminals, as they do not typically buy their guns from legal sources. They get them from illegal sources. Those are the words of A.W.R. Hawkins, who joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer. A.W.R. Hawkins is an award-winning Second Amendment columnist for Breitbart, also the political analyst for Armed American Radio. A.W.R., thank you very much for the time. How are you this morning?
Bob, I'm good. Good to be with you.
Good to have you, sir. So I'm reading your piece in Breitbart about this. About this criminal, this background check, rather, universal background check. Most casual listeners or observers, AWR, would say, hey, what's wrong with a background check? You don't want somebody who's a nut, somebody who's a criminal, somebody who's a felon, somebody's, you know, who's got a history of violence. We don't want these people getting their hands on guns. What's wrong with a background check? What do you say to that?
Right. Well, I always answer two ways, philosophically and practically. Philosophically, do you have to undergo a background check to exercise free speech or to exercise freedom of religion or to own the property protected by Amendment 3 or to enjoy the security protected by Amendment 4, security in our person's houses, papers, and effects? No, I don't have to undergo a background check. Those things are inherently mine because I'm human. And so that's my first problem with it. My second problem is background checks are insidious. They expand. We've had background checks at the retail point since 1993. That's when the legislation was passed. And 93 to 98, they got it set up the way we have it now. But see, now they want to expand it. And that's the problem. Once you let them in with something like this, it is always going to be open for expansion. And already, these background checks, were they in place on private sales, as you pointed out, Bob, they would criminalize a neighbor who wants to sell a five-shot revolver to a lifelong neighbor. Even if that neighbor wants the gun so he could pass it to his daughter so she can defend herself on campus. She's 23 years old. She's petite. She needs self-defense. even in that situation, there's criminalization because you didn't undergo a background check with the government representative. And see, you see how that sounds and how that feels. And then, of course, when you do that background check, you have to pay that FFL a certain fee to cover the price of his time for doing the check. So now the price of your firearm, not only is it cumbersome and you went through hassle to sell it or to purchase it privately, but in addition to that, there is now a paper trail and you paid a fee on top of the price of the firearm. Mm-hmm. And this is how Democrat policies work. They all sound great on the front end, and emotionally we go, ooh, yeah, what's wrong with the background check? There's a lot wrong with it. It crushes freedom.
AWR Hawkins is my guest with Breitbart News. In the article that you wrote that I quoted from at the start of this conversation, you talked about these kinds of checks already being in place at the state level, particularly in California. How's that working out?
You're right. Right, Bob. You know, what was it, December 2nd, 2015, we had the San Bernardino shooting. It wasn't long after that, I believe 2017 in April in Fresno, we had the shooting in downtown Fresno. In 2018, we had the shooting in Thousand Oaks, California, where 12 people were killed in a bar there. And I can keep going. I mean, we can talk about the shooting in the synagogue in the San Diego area in 2020 or 2019 it was. And, you know, how often is it that we turn on our TVs, Bob, and we're looking at this violence in California? We covered it, Breitbart, in the first 16 days of this year, just the first 16 days, shooting victims in South L.A. were up 742%. That's in a state that has universal background checks, which are supposed to be the answer for everything.
When you have universal background checks, AWR, doesn't that require a universal gun registry as well? Doesn't the government have
to know
where every weapon is? And how dangerous is that for our Second Amendment?
Well, I mean, it's pretty dangerous if you look at world history. You look at what's happened when people have registration lists at their beck and call. There's a weird thing in our nation, Bob. Because the public school system, and if you're a public school teacher, I'm not putting you down because there are some great public school teachers, but the top down part of it, where the left tries to control curriculum and everything, what these school systems have done, they've changed the way we think so that when people begin to give examples on guns from world history, a lot of people turn you off immediately and they're like, oh, that sounds conspiratorial or that sounds crazy. So just look at California. In California, they passed universal background checks in 1991. Roughly 7 years later, they passed registration. Now, if you look at California, they have universal background checks, registration, gun confiscation laws. They have a waiting period. They're able to limit how many guns you can buy a month. They're able to do anything they want because they have a registration roll, a database with names and serial numbers on it. And that's where these background checks lead.
And the frustrating part about this, you know, you just struck me when you said serial numbers, because criminals are known when they get their guns on the black market or when they steal them or whatever to file off serial numbers. You know, this is the problem. When violent criminals who use firearms to commit their violent acts or to rob or to whatever the case might be, when they don't have to play by rules that law-abiding victims do, and when we're talking about these, you know, background checks and these registrations and so on and so forth, how can we possibly expect to be safe if they're playing by a different set of rules than we are?
Right. You're exactly right. See, their answer to gun crime, or what the left likes to call gun violence, the answer to that is to punish criminals and punish them severely. And, you know, but when you change your focus and you say, no, what we're going to do is we're going to pass this law and that law, what you're doing is you're saying, without saying it, you're saying you're going to punish the law-abiding citizen instead. And you're exactly right, Bob. These are going to completely miss their mark, as they've done in California, as they've done in all the other states where they exist, because people have to think about this. Think about the worst scenario, a mass shooting. No one likes to think about that. But nine times out of ten, if you look at it, I shouldn't say that figure, but a lot of times, a mass shooter will die. He or she will go into that setting willing to die. Now, if I'm willing to die to harm people, is it is it going to bother me that I'm breaking the law and acquiring my gun? Is it going to be important to me to acquire that gun in a legal fashion? No, because I don't expect
to even if they're not willing to die. We could shorten that if we had to, AWR, because if they're willing to kill someone, which is against the law, where does getting the gun illegally fall into that? Even if they're just willing to commit the murder, that is evidence that the law doesn't exactly mean a whole heck of a lot to these people. So, of course, why would it stop them from getting their gun that way?
Right, you're exactly right. So that's what we're doing. We're not dealing with the problem here. What we're doing is we're finding, ultimately, what gun control comes down to is control. And that's what it is. It's a way to control the law-abiding citizen. The left despises independence. They despise people who can live apart from government. So gun control gives them a way to get back at those people and bring them into the fold and force them to depend on government for safety. That's a terrible way to live, in my opinion. To look to my government to keep me safe. But that's ultimately the goal of these people who push these gun laws.
Last thing, AWR Hawkins of issues in this new universal background check bill introduced by Chris Murphy. You mentioned mass shootings a moment ago. This bill, and again, I'm quoting from your article, is being co-sponsored by Richard Blumenthal. And Blumenthal said the following: the American people are responding to a political movement that has resulted from Parkland, Sandy Hook, Las Vegas, the shorthand of tragedies that have caused this political movement to be the force, to be a force that has met this moment of reckoning. So they're essentially saying this is all about mass shootings, as if a criminal background check, a universal background check rather, and gun registration is going to stop mass shootings from happening. What's the reality?
Well, the reality is, in Parkland and in Las Vegas, both attackers passed a background check to acquire their guns. In Sandy Hook, the attacker stole his firearms. No point of sale gun control is going to fix that. And Bob, I know we can't do this because you can't have dead air and such, but we could have begun this segment by you saying, AWR, name one mass shooting that universal background checks would have stopped. And my response to you would have been dead silence.
Silence, yeah.
I can't think of one. And that's the joke of all this. What they do is they make us feel the angst of the tragedy. And who doesn't feel angst when innocent people are harmed? But they make us feel the angst of the tragedy. And then in that angst, they try to shove this stuff through. And this stuff wouldn't have stopped anything. In reality, if more good people had guns to defend their lives and the lives of those children or whatever the setting is, that would have made a difference. But that's what the gun grabbers oppose.
Yeah, that's 1,000% right. And I would also point to, where do the vast majority of, shootings occur in this country every year? It's not in mass shootings. It's in urban neighborhoods, in urban centers, where gang members, I look at Chicago, for example, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people shot and killed in that city every single year. The vast majority of them are gang on gang violence. And I don't think those gang members with their criminal records are applying for going through universal background checks and registering their weapons. They're getting these weapons illegally and using them to shoot each other and innocent victims. So, if you're really trying to reduce gun crime in this country, or gun violence, as they call it, law-abiding people getting background checks isn't going to do the trick, because the vast majority of the real bad people with guns are getting their guns illegally.
Right. And Bob, one caveat that's important to remember, most mass shooters, and by most, I mean well up in the 90 percentile, they get their firearms legally. Mass shooters do. Because most mass shooters have no criminal record. They only have criminal intent. And a background check can't detect intent. It looks backward. That's why it's a background check. And so if someone plans to harm a large group of people next week, but they've, up to this point in life, all the worst thing they've had is a traffic ticket, they won't have any problem passing a background check. Right. And then they have their firearm, and they can do whatever they want with it. And that's why, ultimately, gun control is a poor substitute for freedom. Because the people have to be free to have their arms with them, keep and bear arms. They have to be free to do that so they can defend themselves, their families, and those around them.
defending the Second Amendment, perhaps more important now maybe than it has ever been in this very, very rapidly changing country. And that's what A.W.R. Hawkins talks about and writes about. He's an award-winning writer covering these issues with the Second Amendment for Breitbart News. And again, a political analyst for Armed American Radio as well. A.W.R., it's a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for shining a light on this. We appreciate it.
Bob, it was great to be with you. Have a great day.
You do the same, sir. Thank you. All right, 9:50, we're going to take a timeout. I want to come back. I want to hear from you on any one of the bills I just referenced. You want to talk about what Mike DeWine is doing to 15 other states when it comes to relieving the people of their burdens, of the sanctions against them, of the punishments that they are facing simply for being human and carrying viruses and diseases and not being sterile. That's exactly what's going on. You want to hit on that. Dial it up now. I've got guests coming up after the top of the hour and at the bottom of the next hour, so hit me up when you can. 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. Right back. As I was talking to A.W.R. Hawkins, and I said that this is perhaps the most crucial time to protect our Second Amendment rights, you may be wondering why. Well, if you tie that story to one of the other stories that I did at the top of the show, which is talking about the three competing bills for most dangerous radical piece of legislation the Democrats have put forth yet, you'll see why. One of those was the bill to defund police. Now, they're not calling it the bill to defund police. They put a flowery name on it because everybody feels badly for George Floyd. So they call it, the George Floyd Reform in Policing Act or something of that nature. They put his name on it, and they're trying to say that this is in order to stop police brutality and stop police lethal force and all of these kinds of things. But the bottom line is cops aren't going to be allowed to be cops. This is how I tie it to the gun story. Cops aren't going to be allowed to be cops. And if cops aren't allowed to be cops, and they can't be cops safely, and they can't be assured of going home to their families, if they can't be assured they won't be sued for what somebody else thinks was offensive or was too much force. You know, I described a couple of scenarios about somebody resisting arrest and having to be taken to the ground before they can be cuffed, and they're taken to the ground, and they hit their head on the ground, and suddenly they can sue the cop. In anti-First Amendment cancel culture world, there doesn't even have to be a physical confrontation. If an officer doesn't have his body cam on, a suspect can say that he used a word or words or offensive language that were offensive and inappropriate, and he could sue them for that. He could sue them for just about anything if they don't have qualified immunity. So cops aren't going to engage, is my point. And if cops aren't allowed to be cops, if cops aren't allowed to be cops, who's going to defend your family? Huh? It's going to have to be you. And that's why the Second Amendment is going to be that much more important to defend. So that's how I tie those two stories together. But a little bit more on that George Floyd bill, as they're calling it. It's essentially a defund the police bill because it's going to cost police departments across the country hundreds of millions of dollars to live up to and to enforce new federal mandates. And these are hundreds of millions of dollars they don't have. So in order to make these mandated changes, they're going to have to cut their budgets by cutting their staff, their personnel. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said, "Democrats just voted to defund the police. The unfunded mandates in their bill would cost police departments hundreds of millions of dollars, the equivalent of taking 3,000 cops or more off the streets. Our men and women in uniform deserve better." Jim Jordan, our friend from Ohio, along with Jason Smith from Missouri, two ranking members, one of the budget, one of the Judiciary Committee, sent a letter to the CBO director, Philip Swagel, highlighting their concerns with the bill. Quote, "It's our understanding that H.R. 1280 contains provisions that significantly violate the current unfunded Mandates Reform Act of 1995 threshold of $85 million. It is further our understanding that these provisions may result in additional costs to state and local and tribal governments totaling in the hundreds of millions of dollars, which would deprive these localities of the resources needed to provide adequate policing." In other words, number of officers will be shrunken down to next to nothing if they have to spend all of their money on these ridiculous federal mandates. Jordan's office said the bill was developed without any Republican input whatsoever, and Democrats rejected some of the common sense proposals that Republicans wanted to add, including ensuring that the Border Patrol has necessary equipment to fight dangerous cartels, preventing unions from shielding bad cops in collective bargaining agreements, requiring that federal law enforcement agencies record all of their interviews. This bill was promoted and sponsored by far-left Karen Bass. I mentioned her when I was playing those clips before, from California, who has ties to communists. As a matter of fact, her ties to communists really derailed her opportunity to be Joe Biden's vice presidential running mate last year. Remember when Joe Biden promised to hire a woman or to choose a woman as a running mate? And then, because of the summer of racial reckoning, he was forced to promise it would be a woman of color? That narrowed him down to, like, Kamala Harris, Karen Bass, and, like, Stacey Abrams. I mean, literally, it was such a tiny, tiny field of people who fit the demographic profile and had the qualifications. Karen Bass was on that short list. I guess I should probably mention the Queen of Benghazi as well. What's her name? Susan Rice. But Karen Bass was essentially bounced because she's got ties to communists, for crying out loud. Representative Nicole Malliotakis from New York said, Democrats have a way out here, offered this late last night, a chance to vote on an amendment that recognizes and appreciates those who serve in law enforcement and condemns calls to defund, dismantle, disband, dismantle, or abolish police. 219 Democrats voted against that amendment, which stopped it from being added. I mean, that's just language, and they wouldn't even allow that. And that's amazing. The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act will address systemic racism, Nancy Pelosi said, curb police brutality, and save lives. Nancy Pelosi, take your Botox-needing arse off somewhere. This is going to get people killed. And worst of all, the vast majority of them are going to be minorities. Minorities are going to get killed because of your bill. Sleep well tonight, sweetheart.